Live from the Shangri-La of South County.
Coming to you from Rust and Tustin in the state of disrepair.
In the morning, Nathan Penetration.
In the morning, Brian Black.
I think this is a twist off. Yeah. Shiner Bock.
Have you ever, tried to pry a lid off a twist off and you break the glass on the threading?
That's what I thought happened. Luckily, it
didn't. I've done that before. It sucks because then you have to dump. It's like you can't drink the beer now because there could be glass in the hole.
That would suck.
Yeah, especially if it's like a 22, like a big one.
I bought some new toys over the weekend. I bought some new toys over the weekend.
No, yeah, I was drinking beer. I'm like,
oh, what are you drinking?
I haven't had it in a long time. Looked kind of good. I got a Modelo.
That's a good beer. Is it the
It's
Negro
it's
Modelo.
It's just the Modelo Especial. It's good. It's basically the same thing as Corona. I think it's bottled in the same facility.
That's good. Michelada.
Yeah, it's a little. It's not as skunky as Corona though. It's slightly less skunky. I think it's better quality, Corona, to be honest. I think Corona goes kind of pairs better with things, and it's more available. So that's why I probably still overall like Corona better, but this beer has some characteristics that are nice.
All right, let's talk about the gaming rig that I referenced last week. The one I've resurrected with my 10-year-old Intel Xeon processors. I bought a bunch of shit from China on Amazon. 25-foot HDMI cable. a HDMI input splitter, so I can do two inputs on one. So that's at the beginning. Then it goes 25 feet around the corner from another room into the room that my display is in, so that my room doesn't get hot. Right now I'm sweating, even though...
If it's splitting the cable, how...
It lets me do two inputs from the other room. So I can do an Apple TV or my gaming system on this display in the other room.
Okay.
I have to go manually switch it. I put it on the wrong end. Anyway, that goes, terminates into a VGA converter.
Oh, God.
So I downsample everything to VGA, and then the VGA adapter is powered and it splices off, so the video goes into the display, but then it has a headphone jack so I can get audio, but it's a Chinese piece of shit, so I have to hold it in place with zip ties.
Oh God.
Because it requires pressure to keep the right channel open, otherwise I can't hear out of my right ear.
That's like my Logitech Z, I don't know what it is, Z5500, the old ones that I've still got, that are like over a decade old. Well, at least that, probably like close to 15 years old. All of the analog connectors are just don't work anymore on it because they don't seat anymore when you plug the cables in. Like, I remember when they started going out, I had to do what you were describing, where you gotta like kind of wiggle them and force them a certain way.
I tried that. All it required was power, like pressure. It had to be forced in.
Yeah.
So I used three zip ties to chain them together so that I could just yank on it and pull the top end down into the casing.
Yeah. Analog connectors in general suck.
I still prefer it over optical.
They're all jank.
I prefer it over optical, and I prefer it over a shitty USB interface like mine that I'm talking on right now, going bad, fuzzing, or screeching like level 100 audio at you.
HDMI is, you know, it's nice because it's easy to, it's keyed, you know, and it's about the width of USB, so it's, you know, it's easy, like when you're reaching behind like a head unit or a AVR or something like that, and you can't see behind it. You can kind of feel with your finger the connector, and you could kind of but it's easier to plug something like that in versus having to connect a VGA cable at the back of VGA a computer.
It's easier than HDMI or no, DVI, because of the way it's keyed. The one advantage with DVI is if it's DVI-D, I think it has that vertical slit, the long one, and you can run your nail along it. And once your nail grabs on one of the edges, you know that it's stuck inside that slit. And that's the, you look at your HDMI connector, you reach back there and you put it in that way. Because you can't always tell if it's the right slant, if it's slanting up or down when you're reaching around to like feel it, because DVI is so much thinner than VGA. VGA, right. At least you could kind of like stick your finger in it and part of it would be pinching and the other part wouldn't. Also, you're popping. What else?
I backed up a little bit from the mic.
So I use one old Dell display and I switch between inputs, and that makes me think that I should buy one of these crazy 43-inch 4K Dell displays that has four or five inputs, like two DisplayPort, one mini, two HDMI inputs, a VGA input, and then I can do four-way picture-in-picture. Four-way picture-in-picture.
Yeah, in theory, that's cool. 43
inches.
I question how well that's going to perform. Dell's QC has gone downhill in the last few years, at least for their laptop line. I don't know about their displays. But I would personally go with whatever is going to allow you to get the highest frame rate you can get. So I would recommend...
But this is a pure utility display. This is a workstation display. Like, I set it up so I can service other devices. And the handy thing is, since it's so big, I can hook an Apple TV and stream stuff to it.
When you have that philosophy going forward with it, you're just kind of doing what you already were doing, using
that's exactly
the same
what
machine
is.
To do multiple stuff. So I would, if you want something that's going to be a gaming machine, I would recommend something that's ultra wide that is 100 hertz or higher. And that'll be really nice. That'll be a really
but the
experience.
Options are limited. You can't do 4K because you can't push that much bandwidth over DisplayPort.
It's close enough, though. It does 3880 by 1440, so it does the 4K height.
Width.
Or, no, I'm sorry, it does widths, yeah.
It just means it's
2K height.
It's not 2X resolution, though. So you're not getting Retina or high DPI. You're just getting a wide screen that has as many pixels wide. It's not the same.
Yeah, but...
A high DPI or Retina display, typically 4K... At the same 24-inch or 23-inch size, has four times as many pixels. So you have to display everything four times bigger. They call it 2X, because it's twice as wide. And then you get that detail even when you get up close, but everything's physically the same size windows instead of microscopic ones.
Yeah, but you're capped at 60 hertz. There's no 4K displays
smooth.
To go above that.
60 is smooth.
It's not
as smooth as 100, I know, but...
If you want to play shooters especially, you're going to have a huge... Like, if you want to play the new Quake coming out, you have an advantage running a monitor that goes higher in 60
Bring
hertz.
Bring it.
You're going to... Okay.
I'm going to punish you.
On a 43-inch... I don't even want to know what the input lag is on that. What's the...
I don't know. It's probably not good.
Yeah, it's not going to be something you're going to want for playing that stuff. I would get two separate displays, because it'll probably be the same price as that 43-inch... You get two separate displays.
Yeah, it's like $900.
Yeah, so I mean, you could get like a $500... I think that Samsung one that I'm still thinking about getting is like... I think it's like $700 right now. It's 34-inch, ultra-wide, curved, 3880 by 1440, and it's 100 hertz. That would be perfect for gaming. Big enough that it's big, and... You're going to get excellent performance in whatever you play.
Did you see that rumor on Mac Rumors about an Apple TV and then some photos of some like paper thin piece of metal that's supposed to be a TV?
Yeah, it's got a giant Apple logo on the back of a little box.
Maybe
where the internals probably are.
There's probably no inputs. It's probably just an integrated like iPad / Apple TV, and that's all it is.
It's probably going to be an Apple TV with tvOS either built into it, and that's going to be their answer to a 4K Apple TV. Because it'll display 4K from the built-in Apple TV on the display, and then that'll be their exit from the Apple TV market. They probably won't make another Apple TV as we know them. It'll just be the little boxes that were the Apple TV are now going to become that thing, and the Apple TV will be the hardware in it.
That's an interesting idea.
Because that's what I thought of when I saw the box, and it makes sense because why would they still have and I don't even think their sales were that good with the Apple TV comparatively to like the iPhone, the iPad.
Sorry. I swear there's no pop filter over your mic.
I have to move close and far away from my mic because I have air blowing on me from my fans. Otherwise, it's too hot in my room.
Yeah.
And I have to position myself constantly where I could feel the air, but it's also not hitting the mic. So like,
what was your old pop filter? You should put that thing back on.
It's around here somewhere. I don't know, but
that's a good idea.
I'll just get a different pop filter that's just bigger and thicker. I'll order one on Amazon or something. Just have one piece.
I thought you didn't like that it like cut you or you had to look through it or something.
When I mean bigger, I mean denser, like the foam that's surrounding the mic to block the popping. But the Apple TV, that's going to be, I don't even want to know how expensive that's going to be. Because they're going to, you know how Apple is, like their competition in that market is already probably within the $1,000 price point. So that means they're going to have to increase the cost for having like the Apple TV component built into it, and then there's the Apple tax. So I wouldn't be surprised if those things are $3,000 right out the gate.
Yeah, maybe. I think a 4K 60-inch OLED is about that price right now, and I don't think there's going to be that much of an Apple tax. Their stuff's pretty good value. I'm looking at a iPod Hi-Fi from 2006. That's 10 years old. My laptop's 5 years old. My iPad is at least 5 years old. My two cinema displays are 14 years old.
Yeah.
I'm jumping straight from these 2003 to 2004 aluminum cinema displays to a 4K or whatever display.
Are those cinema displays 1080 or what resolution are they?
Yeah, 1920 by 1200. Oh yeah, that's another thing. That Chinese splitter thing that I got for HDMI, it can literally only do up to 1080. 1200, 1920 by 1200 is 120 pixels too tall. It can't do it. It just gives up. And since it's a 16 by 10, not a 16 by 9, because that was the style, I can't do I can't do anything that's not perfect because the display tries to automatically stretch the VGA signal so that it fits properly because it doesn't have those manual controls to adjust the positioning. And that means I have to run at, because the next best resolution is 1680 by 1050.
Well, it's going to look like ass, whatever you end up doing.
It's fuzzy.
Other than this default resolution, or the native resolution, I mean.
Plus VGA.
Yeah. Apple TVs.
Yeah, maybe it'll be awesome. I would definitely want one. Plus, it looks pretty good if it's just like this thin, according to this weird rumored photo in like this weird Matrix room. It looks like it would be sexy. Kind of like my aluminum cinema displays right now.
Yeah, everything they make looks good for the most part. But yeah, that, because they're already, you know, assuming they come out with that thing, they're already entering a highly saturated market, highly competitive, so they need to have enough features built into it to make it stand out from the competition.
Oh, yeah, I was looking into the CPUs for the gaming rig at, like, the buy. And the X series from Intel, like the 4740X, I think that's the model number. It only has 16 PCI Express lanes, despite being a really high clock rate quad-core. Mm. And the only way to get more, I think we might have talked about this the night before, so I'm just doing it for the show. Like an i9 is the only way to get up to 44 PCI Express lanes, which is a lot. But when you go with the AMD Threadripper series, they have up to 64. And then with their server chip, which I guess they're calling Epic with a Y, it has 128. Up to 128. But it's going to be like lots and lots of cores that are really low clock rate. But if I can get the highest clock rate AMD chip, I would have more PCI Express lanes. I could potentially do two X16 GPUs.
So you'd have, okay.
I could do up to that versus an Intel one where I could do a high clock rate, but I can only ever get one GPU, not two.
Okay. I don't know what I'm going to do for because the Coffee Lake stuff is coming out. It's supposed to be at the end of this month. And I don't know which chips they're going to come out with first, but I'd probably be eyeing like a i7, whatever their high-end i7 is. And then I'm going to be looking at what AMD has for the same similar performance in that price range. Because I think I'm going to, my hardware is still okay right now, but I think probably by early next year, I'm going to upgrade everything.
I can't wait for a new DisplayPort, like a new version that has more bandwidth, because these non-high DPI displays that are just wide but do really high frame rates just aren't cutting it. I want the high frame rate, and I want the high resolution. And I want two GPUs.
Telling you, though, you should look at the that Samsung display. Quantum Dot. Just ask Claw about that. He probably knows enough about it.
All of those displays that I've seen with the really high refresh rate generally don't look very good. But then again, if I'm looking at the Dell one, it's purely for utility. Kind of like the gaming one. But I'd rather have a utility one that makes me money versus one that's just for gaming.
Yeah. But you're missing out if you don't do the gaming.
I'm okay with missing out. 60 FPS is good enough for me. I would be happy to get 60 FPS all the time. I wish I did right now. I'm using a 470, and a lot of these newer games, I'm getting like 40, and I'm running at 720p. With a lot of stuff on medium. When I play PUBG,
channel,
everything's on low.
Link to Samsung.com.
Alright, so that's the link to the Samsung display.
You can get it less than that. It's not 850. But that is a really nice display. I've seen them in person. The curve is actually pretty drastic on it. So if you're sitting closer to it, it's probably pretty immersive to use.
You know, that curve, despite being stupid, it would actually be kind of useful for such a wide display. Because the things I was reading about this big, giant, shitty Dell display, when you're sitting in front of it, like a computer display, which is too close because the screen's so goddamn big. I'm talking 43 inches. It's really tall.
It's massive. Yeah.
Fucking pull a muscle looking up in the corners for this thing. If I'm going to check the time in OS X, I have to look all the way up. I'm going to pull a muscle or fall over in my chair. The edges of the screen are dark. Because the panel is so shitty. It says it's an IPS display, but I don't buy it. I'm looking at a Dell display, and then the upper left corner, there's this dark shadow.
A VA panel.
A what?
VA.
That's a
VA
thing?
It's like in between IPS and TN, yeah.
But would they claim it's an IPS?
Let's see.
Because they say it's an IPS. yet the edges of the screen are like,
it's apart. Pretty subjective though, because some people say IPS sucks, and I don't think they know what they're talking about. But VA says MVA panels offer good viewing angles and generally better blacks and contrast than either TN or IPS panels. The response times also look good on paper, but unfortunately not in the real world. So they're subject to ghosting effects, and the response time for black is low. So it's kind of somewhat in between. Because TN, the worst thing about TN is the viewing angles are garbage. You can't see shit if you're like, you know, if you get like, I don't know what angle that would be, but if you're looking at your display and you're sitting at like, if you're looking at it at like 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock from that angle, you're going to get like that white, you know, whitewash you get over the display from the backlight coming in.
Yeah.
That's where IPS has the best advantage. Other than it having the best colors, it has the best viewing angles. So I guess VA is somewhat in between.
All I know is my Dell display has this polarizer, kind of like one of our TVs. And when you aren't looking at it dead on, if you're looking at it dead on, it's gotten really nice blacks. But from any other angle other than directly in front of it, like slightly to the left or slightly to the right, the black washes away and you have gray black. You have to look at it on just the right angle. Like when they demo the thing to you in the store, that's the angle they want you to see. But you step to the side and there's no more black level. It's just all shades of gray with big old macro blocks.
Yeah, that's not good.
It's interesting for analyzing images because since it gets rid of the black level, I can do that with this display. I can just kind of look at stuff on an angle. You can kind of see where somebody edited an image. It exposes anything in the dark areas. What else is on my list?
I want this fucking monitor.
Let me know how it is.
I'm not in the market for it quite yet.
Is this G-Sync or FreeSync?
It's FreeSync. It's, well, yeah, G-Sync would add another $300 onto the price.
Will an NVIDIA card support FreeSync since it's a DisplayPort standard?
It's a DisplayPort standard. You just have to enable it in the drivers.
That's it? Why do people buy G-Sync?
Because G-Sync's better. Both are adaptive V-Sync. G-Sync just has a chip built into the display that handles it at the display level, so it does, the GPU doesn't have to do it. And therefore, it's just going to be better. But it's an NVIDIA technology, so the only way that chip can work is with an NVIDIA card.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I knew the NVIDIA part. I just didn't know the syncing thing.
The FreeSync is an AMD thing, but you don't have to have an AMD card to enable it. It's just part of the DisplayPort spec. It's not this, like, AMD FreeSync, if you have an AMD card and a FreeSync monitor, is not the same thing as an NVIDIA card and a G-Sync monitor. Like, in theory, they're supposed to be the same, but the NVIDIA one has a separate chip in the display, whereas the AMD FreeSync ones don't.
Okay. These stats on this display on the Samsung page are bullshit.
I'm sure.
I'm getting a 12-inch Retina MacBook with that new keyboard, the one from the MacBook Pro.
Nice.
i5, which is just a renamed M5. 16 gigs of RAM and 512 gig SSD.
Okay.
I have all the cables right now, just so that they can torture me until next Wednesday, so before the next show. But meanwhile, I have to stare at these cables that I literally can't plug into any device I have because it's USB Type-C and I don't have anything that uses it yet.
Yeah.
And then that cable connector is kind of confusing logically because it's the same look as Thunderbolt 3. because physically it's the same in terms of dimensions. I was like, oh, I could buy a Thunderbolt hard drive, so I have the really high bandwidth drive, and then I could just interchange it between both of my Macs. And I realized that the MacBook doesn't even have Thunderbolt at all. So
even with the i5s, it doesn't have it still?
No, because it's really an M5. You're looking at basically an Atom.
Why do they call it an i5 then?
Because it's bullshit. It's for marketing purposes. People don't want an M5, they want an i5, they want an i7. So they have an M5, M7, and they just rebranded it.
What's the, do you know what the i5 number is? See if, I want to see if there's a pass mark for it.
Can you look that up? MacBook, I'll talk about
MacBook
it.
MacBook i5, yeah.
I got Space Gray. And I think the PCI Express SSD is NVMe, so it's going to be real fast. Hopefully it'll hold me over until I can upgrade my MacBook Pro. It'll be a nice terminal and code machine that I can take portable with me and use full time in the event that my laptop dies. Because it'll be a while till I get the new MacBook Pro.
It's the 15 watt, right? The 2.3 gigahertz?
I think so. It's going to be real slow. It's not the MacBook Pro, it's the MacBook. So it's going to have two cores.
4690. That's not bad. I mean, it's not fantastic. That's about what... Let me see.
Like a Pentium 4 gets that or something? I know it's going to be slow.
Pentium 4 is going to be way worse than that. I think it's about what the third gen i5s were, the desktop ones. Its single thread rating is not very good though. It's 1739. You usually want above a 2000 single thread rating for single core tasks, but this is a completely different like chip. You know, it's super low voltage. 15 watts is crazy.
Yeah. And I'm going to start using Safari as my primary browser just to make sure I get the most out of that battery life. Because this is going to be just dedicated to work stuff. I mean, for the most part. I can't do anything else with it.
I don't know. What's the built-in... is it Iris...
615 or something, Intel integrated graphics.
It's all Iris now. They don't do all of the I chips have Iris graphics now. It's a Intel i5 7200. That's the chip. 7200U.
I guess they use for ultra low voltage. It doesn't have a fan. I'm just hoping that during my usage, during the 6 to 8 hours that I have for battery life, I'm hoping that it doesn't overheat and underclock. That's my worst nightmare, because that's my problem I have right now. I have to have these fucking... I have fans pointed at my laptop so that it doesn't underclock. It's pathetic. Some sensor on the board is like not reading the temperature right, so it never turns the fans up high enough.
Oh, wait, I was wrong. This comes with Intel HD Graphics 620.
It's basically an Atom.
Yeah, if it's not at least Iris, I don't think the performance is going to be very good.
No, it's going to be terrible for games.
Supposedly. Oh, here we go, video. Iris HD 620 Gaming. Oh, he's playing Grand Theft Auto and it's getting 30 FPS. It's in an i3 7100U.
That'll probably overheat that chip and give it an early death, like mine.
Yeah. It's not terrible, though. What else are we talking about?
PUBG? Oh yeah, I didn't get SteamOS installed because I couldn't figure out the fucking installer. I think it has something to do with UEFI. So I couldn't boot the thing. I just installed Ubuntu 17.04, which works out really good. And then I installed Lutris, which is this wine / game manager. It'll install all kinds of emulators for pretty much any game on any platform. And it will install from a... Here, I'm going to send a link to the website.
All right.
Lutris. Oh shit, that's the wrong website. .net. Incoming. So any of the games on Lutris.net, Lutris.net, it will acquire for you and put them on your system. And it's almost completely scripted. It'll pull it from different resources. It'll patch it to get to the right version so it'll work. Then at the end, it will launch it. And it'll put it all on its own little like change route. So I have a special version for Tribes 2 that installs a perfectly tailored Wine setup just for that. There's one for StarCraft 2, but apparently it's broken, so I have to report that. And then there's another one for Tribes Ascend, but I'm not able to log in right now because I forgot my account name.
They have 4x4 Evo 2 on here. I remember playing that game. That was a great truck racing game.
So this site is a front end for one piece of software that kind of orchestrates the acquisition and the playing of all these different games by you clicking a game in Lutris, then it bounces you out to the emulator that plays it, or in my case, the Wine instance that launches the game.
Okay.
And somebody out there is writing a whole bunch of Python to make this work.
Yeah. Probably a single man project like the Linux.
Probably.
Game managers.
I'm sure his ponytail is braided with his ass hair. It's probably long enough for that. Or the neck beard.
That's funny.
It's just all one.
Weave.
And then I reboot onto Windows 8.1. So I can play PUBG. Which runs like shit. Everything's on low. I'm playing at 720p. I was playing on a Steam controller before. That technically works, but my computer's so slow it makes it really unenjoyable. But using the Steam controller made me really want a 43-inch multi-purpose Dell display so I could just kick back and play it from a distance.
Yes.
It would be 43 inches of 1280 by 720. The pixels would be as big as my fingers.
Yeah. Your money is going to be better spent on an actual gaming display.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's Dell, too. I can't give a recommendation on anything from them currently.
Unless it's from 10 years ago.
Yeah, they were a good company 10 years ago.
I'm still using one of their displays. I think you are too.
Yeah, 1600 by 1200 from the year like 2002.
What about you? Are you working on anything new?
Not really. Got my DOI server back up.
I was on there.
I've had a tentative zone minder project that I've been working on that I haven't really been able to work on very much.
What is that?
Zone minder. It's open source NVR. What else? I've been looking at options for. I'm trying to get rid of the Time Warner Cable's TV package. And I need an alternative, and so I've been looking at these HD home run devices where you can basically set up an antenna in your house and it'll create a DVR of it'll record shows picked up over the air, and you could install this what's the program called? You can install it in Debian. It's an open source DVR manager.
The TiVo replacement, whatever that thing was called.
I don't know. I don't know if it's a TiVo replacement. You don't pay for it though. And then you store all your media locally. And then I was going to use the Plex Pass, pay $5 a month for that, and then tie it into Plex. And then I can get live TV. Like, I could go through channel listings along with have a DVR, which I didn't have before. I don't have a DVR with my cable subscription right now. So, because I didn't want to pay their fucking bullshit $25 a month for that box. So, I picked up one of those HD Home Run Connects. I haven't set it up yet, though. Because I want to, like, I need to make sure I can find the optimal location for an antenna in the house first. And then
channel,
I'll set this
Nate,
thing up.
Link to silicondist.com. Channel, Nate, link to silicondist.com.
It's $100.
HD Home Run from Silicon Dust.
Yeah.
This thing does the recording for you?
So it's what, yes. Well, yes and no. It manages everything, but you need to have a machine to host the DVR content. Like, this doesn't have storage on it or a hard drive. So what it does is it's like a relay. It's taking the over the air signal. It's running it through this device. And then there's on the Plex side, it, because this is fully supported by Plex with a live TV service on the Apple TV. That's one of the reasons I got it. So this communicates with Plex, and then from the network, it sees if you have a NAS or something like that, and then it automatically. So the front end is in Plex. Everything you're working with in the UI is on Plex, and then it's accessing your NAS over the network, which is keeping the stuff that's DVR'd and saved from the OTA signal. And then you can tie in other subscriptions to it. So I could tie in like my Sling TV if I want that with it. Because obviously I'm not going to get 100 channels of OTA. I'll be lucky if I get 50. So this is just for saving money. And you actually get better signal quality through this. Like the signals that are the signal that's OTA is better than what you get over cable through Time Warner or whoever you're paying for.
You should check out a Drobo or something.
No, this is what my Open Media Vault machine's for.
All right.
Yeah, okay. So my NAS. Yeah, so that's going to be in the NAS. I just got to get that app set up because it's Debian based. So there's no plugin for it in the OMV interface, but it runs a server when you install that program so that I can just access it over the, you know, over the network.
What's it called?
Web UI. I'm trying to remember the name of the fucking program.
So like a DLNA server?
No, it's the actual DVR. It's the program that makes it so that you can hold on a second.
Is it transcoding it or something?
Yeah, because the transcoding isn't done on this device. It's done from your NAS. And that's why they say there's limitations. Like when you go on the Plex website, like they say, oh, you can use a Drobo or you can use Synology NAS and these other devices, but then it warns you about using like these cheap NAS boxes, like those Western Digital ones and stuff, because they don't have, they just have like a little SATA controller on those. They don't have anything that'll do transcoding. So you actually need like a machine to do that.
Okay. Yeah, doing that on a Drobo would be, having it transcode stuff would be pretty crazy.
Well, and the one thing I'm a little worried about is that I'm already having transcode on this Open Media Vault box, and so if I'm having it transcode all of these signals coming in too, these over-the-air signals, I don't know. I've got an i5, a fourth-gen i5 in it right now. I don't know if that's going to be enough to be able to do like 2 1080, because this device, this Home Run Connect, will do up to 2 streams.
I have a crazy idea for you. Vulture, $5 a month. See if it works. I bet you it will. There's enough performance.
Too much latency.
You're not going to have a delay.
Like when I'm going through the app, like the channels and stuff like that, it's has pick, to then communicate. Like,
pick one locally then, like a LA based Vulture instance. $5 a month. I bet you it'll work and be adequate. And then if you want more performance, upgrade it to $10 a month.
Yeah, but see, the whole point of this is I don't want to pay. I'm like trying to eliminate what I'm already paying.
But
you know?
It's an E3 or an E5 or whatever. It's going to be a faster Xeon chip than whatever you have with that Celeron. And you will never have to manage it. You'll just have less DVR space.
Okay. Well, I think this will work if I get it set up the way I want to. They have 3 different devices of these HD home runs. There's the Connect, the Extend, and the Prime. The Prime is one that you can't use for OTA. You only use it with your cable provider. And what you do is you get a cable card from them. You pay like the $3 a month for that stupid cable card. And then you plug that into this thing, and then you get all the channels through that. But you have to still have a cable subscription for that one.
Popping bad. Okay. Well, if you have trouble encoding, there's a pretty good chance, because it's software-based encoding, there's a pretty good chance that one of those Vulture instances could do it. Not the storage one, but the CPU ones could do it. The thing is, how much storage would you have? You'd have like 40 gigs. That's not enough storage. If you made your server in New York or New Jersey, Vulture has a block storage option that you can attach and pay for like 100 gigs. Especially if you were able to pull off $5 a month or $2.50 a month plus the storage, and that was enough performance to get what you wanted, you could just scale up the storage.
Yeah.
The storage is a little pricier because it's actively accessed by the virtual machine.
Well, this is something that I'm going to likely take with me wherever I end up relocating to in the next year. So,
if you have a cloud-based one, you'll never have to move it.
I don't know what kind of internet connection I'm going to have where I go from here, and
you only need 10 megs.
Yeah, I may be in an area that is like some shitty fucking AT&T DSL only. So,
as you can get 10 megs,
I'm not counting on that being the case, but it's a possibility.
How many channels can you get, like, at once?
What do you mean, how many channels can you get?
Like, I know that the antenna technically receives everything at once, but how many can you tune into at once?
Well, that's what I was saying. It depends on where you place it and how close you are to LA, where all the signals come from. So,
could you record everything at once?
I can record 2 things at once, 2 okay. streams. Yeah. I don't know, but if this works out, it's not that much of an investment. It's $100, and I've already got an antenna here, so I just gotta test it out and see if I can make it work while I'm here and get a significant amount of free channels. And then if I can't, then I'll have to go back to the drawing board.
I wonder if these guys are publicly traded. Silicon dust stock.
I think they've been around for a while.
Yeah, I don't think they're publicly held, though.
I don't think they make enough products.
But with the Apple TV apps and these boxes, these businesses could explode.
Yeah.
Because if Apple does come out with a display and there's no inputs, the input is the app and the internet, then plugging this thing into your LAN would be a way to accomplish that.
Right. Interesting. They make enterprise products, multicast live TV streaming boxes.
For the internet, too?
If you go to products, commercial, they have like server rack stuff.
Oh, that's cool. I want something that will switch multiple HDMI inputs and encode it into a 1080p stream over USB. So I can just turn that everything plugged into that rack mount into a webcam or for a computer to stream an office space. And then I do all the audio through Mumble.
Yeah, you can only do this. Oh, wait, never mind. You can do this over VLC. That's cool.
Which one of these?
If you go to products, commercial, tech, the most expensive one, the Tech 4 8US.
Oh, man. So it's doing multicast over the network?
Yeah.
That would totally work. Because you just need to receive that and then encode that into a video stream over Google Hangouts or something.
Yeah, so you need a client, either the client, Windows Media Player, or Video LAN. Does all three of those.
I wonder if there's a button on the front of this rack mount thing to switch between the inputs. There's no details on these.
You can program these.
Oh, these have tuners.
You can code these with C library.
That's cool. Oh yeah, that big Dell display has a serial cable connection on it.
What, for firmware updates?
To change the inputs. It's meant to be like for a stock trader.
Was it 9600 baud?
Yeah, or 5200 or 52,000 or whatever it is.
11200. That's what you need for PFSense if you're gonna do the
11200 or 115200.
Oh yeah, you're right. 115200. My bad.
That's the number I was looking at or thinking of in my head. Yeah, I could never get that working. Thank you for setting that up. We're talking over it. Yeah, we're talking over it right now. Cool. Yeah, because I'm like triple natted. So untrusted devices are like right on the perimeter, and I'm like multiple castles deep.
So you set up a VLAN on that optional port?
A subnet. But yeah.
Yeah, so VLAN.
There's no VLAN tags. None of my routing equipment supports it.
Well, yeah, I mean. But
I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, not like VLANs on a switch, but.
It is practically a virtual LAN.
Yeah.
It's a sub-network, one would say.
There's something else I was going to say. Kind of forgot.
What do you know about SD-WAN? Software-defined WAN.
I have no idea.
It's bullshit. I just wanted to know if you knew or heard anything about it. There's no standards or anything. It's all these companies super hand-wavy about how it works. And it's just like, we have an API that talks to our routers, so you don't have to manage them individually. That's the gist of it. Basically, the cloud controller for UniFi.
Ah, okay.
But they don't call it that. It's just a marketing term for these other vendors.
Okay.
But none of them mention the spec. There's no spec for it. It's made up. Like, the more you read about it, the more confused you are. You're like, wait, is this this or this? But it's more complication for somebody who wants job security, I guess. It just sounds really expensive for something really simple.
Oh yeah, that whole Ubiquiti RMA process, they've been pathetic. How do you run out of I'll just tell this because people don't know. I had an RMA, a Unify AC Pro, and they have an RMA page on their website, but you fill it out and you submit, and it says successfully submitted. It doesn't do, like, you don't get any confirmation. You don't hear from them at all. So I emailed their support, and I'm like, I submitted this RMA like a week ago. I haven't gotten any response, no confirmation email, anything. They're like, oh, our RMA page is under maintenance right now. And I'm like, so I successfully said the RMA on the RMA page. There was no notification that it was under maintenance. You would think if the RMA page was under maintenance, it would just like go to a 404 page or something, you know, it'd be taken down.
Yeah.
But no. And so he like types out like copy and paste this in the email. Like it's like name, address, you know, serial number, all that shit. So like I fill that out and I send it back to him. Another day goes by. I get the RMA confirmation, and then they give me the instructions for sending it back. So I send the thing back to them. Like 3 or 4 days later, or actually no, it was like 5 days later. I get a because I guess business days. It was going into a weekend, so I think it was like a Wednesday, and they don't have business days on the weekend, so I guess they get leniency for that. But it was still 5 days. So Monday, I get the email confirmation saying that they approved the RMA and that to expect it within 1 to 2 weeks. So that implies that they're shipping it out. The next day, on fucking Tuesday, I get an email saying that they are out of stock and back ordered on the replacements for the Unify AC Pro. So they sent me an email saying that it was confirmed and telling me when to expect my device, and then the next day they tell me that it's back ordered.
Oh, those guys are fucked.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And so I haven't even bothered to email them back, but I'm just thinking, I'm putting this into perspective. It's like, what if this was your only access point on your network, and you don't want to go out and buy another one? In the meantime, you could be out 3 fucking weeks.
Yeah, and if you have a MacBook, a 12-inch MacBook, you can't use Ethernet.
Yeah.
You're so shit out of luck.
But you know what, though? You could get a gigabit Ethernet to USB-C.
And then not charge?
Yeah. I still can't believe they didn't put 2 fucking connectors on that thing.
I'm kind of glad they didn't. Because
I don't
think
Steve Jobs would have approved of that.
Are you kidding me? Did you see the original MacBook? There were no ports on the thing. Because he didn't want any ports on the laptop, he was forced to make a panel that you push on the bottom, and then a little tiny drawer slips down, revealing a single USB port and a headphone jack. So it was his dream computer, and they compromised by making a little bit of room for a slide-out USB connector.
But there was no compromise by not having... There was no compromise not having 2 ports on the MacBook, because they could have easily fit another one on the opposite side. I question why. The MacBook Air was very ahead of its time when that came out. There was nothing even remotely close to being that thin.
I'm talking about the original MacBook Air 2, which was technically, I mean,
it was like a decade ago almost.
Yeah, but it was actually probably thinner by first sight. It was probably thinner. It was perceptually thinner versus the MacBook Air that we all know now, which is the cheese wedge. The original one was a cheese wedge, but all the edges were paper thin, where you could like cut cheese with it.
Right.
So there were no ports on the device. You had to push this panel to reveal the headphone jack / USB port that was there, just because nobody would buy it. I think they feared So they talked Steve Jobs out of it. I think that's like his dream, was a computer without any ports. And this is almost that. That's because that's how you charge. I don't know.
Yeah.
I miss MagSafe.
Yeah, that's a really nice feature. Well, and it's what set it apart from other desk or other notebooks, because they all had the plug-in, you know, connector to charge them. That friction-based connector, which is what USB-C is.
Yeah, so when you kick the cord to go, whatever, answer a phone, your laptop goes flying onto the ground. Nowadays, your screen would probably break. Back in the day, your hard drive would. But they don't make one with a rotating disk anymore. That's another thing. That MacBook Air, because it was so thin and fanless, it actually overheated because of Intel's like first ultra-low voltage chips that they produced, which are... It's the chip that's in my 2007 ThinkPad, the 12-inch. It makes it useless. The chip always runs at 800 megahertz because it's always underclocking, because it's always overheating. Actually, the original MacBook might have had a fan. Anyway, they also put a hard drive in that thing just to get it to the whatever price point. $99 or $999. It was probably more than that when it first came out, like $1,200 or $1,500. But they really wanted to sell you on that 64 gig SSD, which was like $2,000.
That's ridiculous.
That's what it cost back then.
Wow, I'm looking at the MagSafe connector on the MacBook Air, the first one. It was on the bottom. It was like on one of the... It's so weird.
Yeah.
I remember I was in like... I was in college and some guy brought one in and was showing it off.
Channel Nate picture. Link to his blog.
I'm being summoned though, so.
All right. Until next week, bringyourwallet.com/contact for feedback and suggestions. Bringyourwallet.com/donate to support the show and share the show. See you next week.
Justin Bieber.
Sayonara.
Justin Bieber. Justin Bieber.